This completes the set of 5 breathing techniques that are an essential component of this 8-week program. Let me review them for you and suggest how you might use them in your daily routine from now on. Breath observation, which you learned in week 1, is a meditation practice that will help you relax, and it will be a great asset to you if you get in the habit of doing it regularly. I have asked you to do it for 5 minutes a day throughout this program, but you are welcome to extend that time as much as you want. I find that if I do not meditate in the morning before I get caught up in the day's activities, I tend not to do it at all. By bedtime, I am usually too tired to make myself do it. Therefore, I recommend taking 5 minutes in the morning for this practice. At the end of the program, if you increase the time, you can experiment with ways of fitting it into your schedule. The mental reversal of inhalation and exhalation that you learned in week 2 will help you develop your breathing capacity and thereby improve your health in general. I have asked you to do it for a minute a day, but you can also do it whenever you remember to, whenever you have an idle moment. One possibility is to tack it onto the 5-minute period of breath observation. The imaginative play that I call letting yourself be breathed, which I taught you in week 3 and asked you to do once a day for 10 breath cycles, can also be done anywhere and any time, but you may find it easiest to do lying down when you get into bed at night or when you first wake up in the morning. The formal relaxing breath that you learned last week requires at least 2 sessions of 4 breath cycles each. When you finish the program, I will ask you to increase this to 8 cycles twice a day. Of course, you can also do this exercise any time that you feel anxious, upset, or in physical discomfort of any sort, and I encourage you to do so, but 2 sessions are mandatory. I like to do one of them in the morning before I meditate because it naturally puts me in a meditative state. I do the other in bed at night, just before falling asleep. Finally, the stimulating breath that you just learned is suitable for use any time, once you get up to speed with it for a full minute. As I told you, it is very useful for waking yourself up if you feel drowsy or mentally cloudy, but I want you to practice it at least once a day, no matter what. I find that doing it just before the relaxing breath further enhances a meditative state, so I incorporate it in my morning ritual. Here, then, is one possibility for arranging the 5 breathing exercises of this program. Morning, stimulating breath, followed immediately by relaxing breath, followed immediately by breath observation, minimum 5 minutes, followed immediately by reversal of inhalation and exhalation. Bedtime, let yourself be breathed, 10 breaths, followed immediately by relaxing breath. All of this takes less than 10 minutes and can bring you remarkable improvements in health. I think you will enjoy this assignment, and I think you will find that you will drift off to sleep quite pleasantly after the evening session. Remember that the benefits of breath work depend on daily practice and develop gradually and cumulatively. In addition to the usual recommendations to bring flowers into your home, I've asked you to think of a piece of music you find inspirational and uplifting, and to listen to it. Music has a special power to influence consciousness. It is often the soundtrack of a scary movie more than the images on the screen that gives people goosebumps and chills. Many cultures around the world recognize this power of music. Some forbid it, Islamic fundamentalists. Others use it in rituals designed to alter consciousness, Voodooists. The essential tool of the shaman is a drum. By using particular rhythms, he or she can leave the physical body and journey to the spirit realm. Once I had the pleasure of listening to a large gamelan ensemble play in Chicago's Field Museum. Gamelan is the traditional music of Bali, produced by a variety of gongs and percussion instruments. One piece I heard and felt that night was a traditional composition used to rouse warriors before battle. By the end of it, I was feeling powerful adrenaline surges throughout my body and was ready to smash something. In African religion, drumming is a highly developed art, capable of inducing spectacular changes in awareness, including sexual excitement, trance, spirit possession, and even complete loss of consciousness. One of the highest purposes of music is to raise spiritual energy and put us more in touch with the higher self. I would not presume to recommend particular compositions or even types of music to you, because musical preference is strongly culturally conditioned and a matter of individual taste. As with food, one person's meat, or better, salmon, is another's poison. Handel's Hallelujah Chorus certainly pleases me, but so does Creedence Clearwater Revival's Looking Out My Back Door. If the musical key to your higher self is Home on the Range or the Marine Hymn, that's your business. Just make a point of listening to it this week and perhaps preparing a list of other musical compositions that also uplift your spirits. Try to bring these experiences into your life on a regular basis throughout the remaining weeks of this program and after you complete it. Optional. If you are inclined to experiment, I would like you to consider a fruit fast this week. I put that phrase in quotation marks because a fast properly means taking in nothing but water or other non-caloric fluids. Eating nothing but fruit for a day is really a restricted diet rather than a fast. But it is an easy introduction to the technique of limiting what you eat as a way of influencing your whole being, body, mind, and spirit. In many cultures, dietary restriction is an aspect of religious observance. Think of the Lenten prohibitions of Roman Catholics, the Yom Kippur fast of Jews, and the whole month of daytime abstinence from food that Muslims practice during Ramadan. Fasting also exists as an Eastern tradition. The Buddha tried it before he settled on meditation as the path to enlightenment, and Indian ascetics commonly use it today to help develop God consciousness. Fasting also has its enthusiasts among people interested in improving their health, people who may be not at all religious. It can be an effective technique owing to a basic fact of physiology. The digestive organs are the largest and bulkiest in the body, and their routine operations consume large amounts of energy. The simple act of not eating or eating only simple foods frees up much of that energy for the body to use in healing. Animals naturally tend to stop eating at the onset of sickness, and humans who do the same often report that the course of sickness is shorter than expected as a result. As a purely psychological discipline without religious connotation, dietary restriction can provide insight into the workings of the mind. Many people eat to satisfy emotional needs as much as to nourish their bodies. People commonly eat to allay anxiety, to try to fill inner emptiness resulting from lack of love and connection to others, and to anesthetize themselves against emotional pain. Some use involvement with food and eating as a way of filling time and distracting themselves. It is interesting to observe what happens when you seal yourself off from that escape route, when you deny the mind a familiar source of comfort. At the least, it can make you more appreciative of food and encourage you to eat more mindfully. In this second half of the 8-week program, I will give you some options for experimenting with dietary restriction and fasting. Even if you try them for the modest purpose of giving your digestive system a rest, I think you will find the experiences useful. This week you can, if you want, start with a fruit fast. Eat nothing but fresh fruit one day of the week, and drink as much water and herbal tea as you want. Fruit is not taxing to the digestive system, since it mostly provides natural sugars that are easily broken down and assimilated. It also gives you vitamins, minerals, and fiber, all good things. If you are trying to lose weight, however, I would stay away from high glycemic load fruits that turn rapidly into blood sugar. These are mostly tropical fruits, such as pineapple, banana, mango, and papaya. Instead, select berries of any kind, apples, pears, oranges, peaches, and plums. Remember to choose organic varieties whenever possible. When you get into bed that evening, note how you feel. Do you feel hungry? Deprived? Virtuous? Lighter? Note any effects on your energy and sense of well-being. If this experiment agrees with you, You might want to do a day of fruit fasting on a regular basis, or as an antidote to a period of eating heavily and unwisely. A Healing Story: The Power of Ginger. I have known Karen Smith since I was in medical school. She married one of my roommates, and we have all been friends ever since. Karen holds a PhD in Chinese art and archaeology, teaches those subjects at Bard Graduate Center for Studies in the Decorative Arts, has been on the staff of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and now, at 63, is Deputy Director and Chief Curator at the Rubin Museum of Art in New York. Perhaps it is in part her affinity for Chinese culture that makes her so receptive to ginger's therapeutic effects. This is what she tells me. 18 years ago, in 1988, I think, I began to feel a certain stiffness in my hands, especially in the morning. I experienced no limitation of motion, just stiffness and achiness, which was really annoying. My mother's sisters all had osteoarthritis, so that was at the back of my mind. When I heard from you about the anti-inflammatory effect of ginger, I decided to give it a try. I began taking 3 capsules of powdered ginger, 550 milligrams each, in the morning. After 2 to 3 months, I noticed a remission of the feeling in my hands. I had also been having gastric distress at this time, which I think was due mostly to my irregular eating habits and maybe also to drinking a lot of coffee. As I began taking ginger regularly, this symptom also abated. And if I stopped the ginger, after 3 to 4 days, I would notice a return of both the stiffness in my hands and the distress in my stomach. At one point, I ran out of ginger, and because I was very busy, I did not buy any more for a month. There was a big difference. So I resolved to make it part of my daily regimen. I really began to look at it as a source of relief. I eat ginger at every opportunity, especially pickled ginger with Japanese food. I recommend it to others. I remember reading that Confucius was never without ginger when he ate. It's the easiest remedy in the world to use with no side effects. It's pungent. Its flower is intoxicating. If I had had a daughter, I think I would have named her Ginger. Chapter 10, Week 6. Projects. Look over the information about tonics in the commentary. Choose one that is appropriate for you and find out where to get it. Take a steam bath or sauna twice this week. Diet. Continue to eat fish twice this week and soy foods twice this week. Continue to eat broccoli at least twice. Add some cooked greens to your diet this week, collards, kale, chard, beet, or mustard greens, for example. Recipe ideas begin on page 154. Mental spiritual. Extend your news fast to 4 days. Visit an art museum or try to view some work of art, sculpture, or architecture that you find beautiful and inspiring. Practice all the breathing exercises every day. Optional. Try a one-day juice fast this week. Any amount of fruit and vegetable juices you care to drink, plus water and herbal tea. Take vitamin C, but skip the other supplements on this day. Commentary. Projects. Your assignment this week is to inform yourself about tonics and begin thinking about using one. The root meaning of the word tonic is stretch. My definition of a tonic in the medical sense is a non-toxic, natural substance that has the ability to stretch or tone the body when used regularly over time. Athletes and fitness buffs are very familiar with muscle tone, but most people do not extend the concept of toning to internal organs and body functions. A particular problem that our culture has with the concept is that the whole idea of health tonics is disreputable, the result of associations with patent medicine salesmen of the past and the opprobrium of the medical and scientific establishments toward this class of remedies. Yet in ethno-medical traditions around the world, people hold tonic plants in the highest esteem, often paying more for them than for any sort of medicine. Conventional medical doctors are suspicious of all treatments with general effects. Doctors and pharmaceutical companies have come to like drugs with highly specific actions, magic bullets. If a drug begins to work on too many different conditions, our scientists lose interest in it because they think generality of action indicates absence of a specific pharmacological mechanism, throwing any observed benefit into the dubious realm of placebo responses and non-science. I find this attitude to be limiting and unhelpful. I like to point out that in traditional Chinese medicine, which groups medicines into three categories called superior, middle, and inferior, it is the inferior ones that have specific effects on specific conditions. To the Chinese medical mind, the highest ideal of a remedy is one that works for everything, a panacea. It is in this superior category that the great tonics of Chinese medicine are found. Ginseng, for example, and the woody mushroom known as Ling Che, usually found here under its Japanese name, Reishi. Let me tell you a bit of the rich history of ginseng as an illustration of the effects of limiting conceptions in medical research and practice. Ginseng is obtained from the root of several species of slow-growing woodland plants. Two species provide most of the ginseng in commerce: Panax ginseng, native to East Asia and known as Asian ginseng, and Panax quinquefolius, native to Eastern North America, known as American ginseng. By the way, the genus Panax takes its name from Panacea, a minor Greek goddess of healing whose name translates as All Heal. The plant was given that name because Chinese doctors believe that its root is good for everything. By the time Westerners first reached the imperial court in Peking in the 16th century, Asian ginseng was already priced extravagantly, since demand for this universal remedy exceeded supply. And the Chinese were always looking for new sources. Spanish Jesuits were the first Westerners to arrive, and the imperial bureaucrats recognized their utility at once. Here was a worldwide network of highly educated men who maintained communication with one another. The Chinese gave them samples of ginseng with the request that they be sent to all of their outposts in an effort to find new sources. Sometime in the 17th century, some of these samples reached a Jesuit mission in Quebec, where a similar plant did indeed grow in the woods. This was American ginseng, a plant not extensively used by Native Americans that was abundant throughout eastern North America. Eventually, samples of it were brought back to Peking, and later word came from the Forbidden City to send as much as you can. So began the commercialization of American ginseng for sale to an ever-demanding Chinese market. Harvesting of the roots reached such a level that within a century, ginseng was extinct in eastern Canada, and the trade spread south to New England and New York, then westward with the settlers of the new land. Many pioneers made their living picking ginseng, or seng, as they called it. Daniel Boone supported himself in this way, for example. Soon, wild ginseng stands in New England and New York suffered the same fate as those in Canada, and the more westerly populations were then threatened by over-harvesting. Now, many Chinese people prefer American ginseng to their own species. A conventional Western doctor would probably say this was just a case of placebos being greener on the other side of the ocean. But the two species actually have different properties. P. ginseng is more of a stimulant, and P. quinquefolius more of an adaptogen, a term coined by a Russian scientist to designate ability to confer resistance to stress of all sorts. We Americans let our native stands of this valuable and beneficial plant be harvested almost to extinction without taking any scientific interest in it, until consumers here began to learn about ginseng and buy it. Throughout the 18th and 19th centuries, and for most of the 20th, American pharmacologists and doctors ignored ginseng. and those Americans who knew the plant knew it only as something strange people far away paid money for. The obstacle to taking the plant seriously here as a natural medicine was that claims for general heal-all properties made our scientists think it was worthless, as far from a magic bullet as a remedy could be. We now know that ginseng is full of biologically active compounds, ginsenosides, that work on the pituitary adrenal axis. This hormonal influence could certainly account for many of the effects attributed to the root. Its positive effect on the metabolism of skin, muscle, and bone, for example. Its tendency to give people more energy, more sexual vigor, and more resistance. In Chinese medical philosophy, tonics are thought to work on the defensive sphere of function of the human body. Anything that increases natural resistance would, of course, produce general effects and look like a panacea. I think tonics work directly on the healing system, increasing not only defensive capability, but also the body's ability to repair itself, replace damaged structure, and regenerate new structure. I hope our scientists are finally beginning to take this important category of natural medicine seriously. I have already encouraged you to become more familiar with two well-known tonic herbs, ginger and garlic, which should now be appearing regularly on your table as you enter week 6 of the 8-week program. Green tea, introduced in week 2, is another that I hope you have tried. Now I'd like to review some other natural products for you to consider. Before you complete the program, I want you to select one or two to experiment with. To give a tonic a fair test, you should take it every day for at least 2 months. In some cases, the effect will be imperceptible, but you will know that you are reducing certain health risks. In other cases, the effect will be obvious, such as feeling increased energy. As a way of introducing these products, let me tell you a bit about one currently promoted by the medical profession, but not acknowledged to be a tonic. Aspirin. Aspirin is a semi-synthetic derivative of white willow bark, meaning that chemists a century ago created it by making a small chemical change in salicylic acid, a natural constituent of willow, salix. Willow bark tea was and is a folk remedy for fever and pain among Native Americans and Europeans. It is weak, however, and purified salicylic acid, the active component, is too irritating to the stomach. Acetyl salicylic acid, aspirin, is both more potent and less irritating. Its three classical actions, antipyretic, fever-reducing, analgesic, pain-relieving, and anti-inflammatory, have made it one of the most widely used remedies in the world. I have heard pharmacologists say that if aspirin were a new drug just invented, it would stand little chance of FDA approval because its actions are so general and its toxicity in overdose so great. But as you now know, generality of action is a big advantage, as I see it, making aspirin a candidate for admission to the superior category of medicines, and few other drugs have such an excellent safety record, considering how many people have taken it and how often since its invention. Researchers keep discovering new effects of aspirin that lead doctors to recommend it to everyone, not just people with fevers, headaches, and arthritis. It keeps platelets from clumping, reducing the risk of blood clots and therefore of heart attacks and strokes. It reduces risk of colon cancer. It reduces risk of esophageal cancer, one of the worst forms of malignancy with a dismal prognosis despite treatment. It reduces the risk of lung cancer, and it may reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease. How aspirin accomplishes these miracles, we do not fully know. It works on the prostaglandin system, which I described earlier in this book. See page 38. And through it, it may have profound influence on cell growth and differentiation throughout the body. Moreover, lower doses of aspirin may work better as a tonic and preventive than higher, which challenges the conventional wisdom that more of a good thing must be better. A standard aspirin tablet contains 5 grains, that is 325 milligrams, of acetyl salicylic acid. Maximal tonic benefit may come from as little as 80 milligrams a day. I currently take 162 milligrams, that is, two low-dose tablets or half a regular tablet, and I take it with food to spare my stomach unnecessary irritation. I recommend a low-dose aspirin regimen to many patients and friends, and I would like you to consider using it too, especially if you are at risk for any of the diseases I listed earlier. I will also ask my colleagues to begin thinking of aspirin as a true tonic, even though it is neither completely natural nor completely non-toxic. This request makes obvious that I am quite willing to use pharmaceutical drugs in appropriate ways. Also, if doctors will begin to see one of their most familiar remedies in this new perspective, it might be easier for them to appreciate the tonic nature of more exotic ones. Here are 9 other tonics for you to consider. Arctic Root. Also known as rose root and golden root, this is the underground part of Rhodiola rosea, which is native to high latitudes of the northern hemisphere. A relative of sedums and the jade plant, it is a perennial with a thick root that is fragrant when freshly cut. In Scandinavia, Siberia, Mongolia, and China, among other places, traditional peoples prize the root as a remedy to enhance physical strength and endurance, treat chronic diseases, enhance fertility, and assure the birth of healthy children. In modern times, Russian scientists have confirmed the botanical identity of the source of golden root, studied its chemistry, and investigated its properties in both animals and humans. More recent research is ongoing in Sweden. Rhodiola rosea root contains a group of distinctive compounds called rosovins that are at least partially responsible for the plant's remarkable properties. They can combat fatigue, stress, and cancer, work as an antioxidant, boost the immune system, and can be a sexual stimulant. In addition, Arctic root enhances the activity of a number of neurotransmitters in the brain, which may explain its reputation for promoting mental clarity and cognition. It may also improve mood and memory and reduce the risk of age-related memory loss. Its toxicity is low. Look for products standardized to 3% rosovins and 1% celidricide, and follow dosage recommendations on the label. Ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is an herbal remedy from the Ayurvedic tradition of India. The root of a plant, Withania somnifera, in the nightshade family. The species name somnifera means sleep-bearing, suggesting that the plant is sedative. But in Ayurvedic medicine, it is valued as a general tonic and restorer of male sexual potency, attributions similar to those for Asian ginseng. Ashwagandha is less well-known in the West than ginseng. It is also much less expensive. Animal research shows the stress-protective effects of ashwagandha and ginseng to be comparable, and a few clinical reports that I have reviewed make me think that the therapeutic potential of this plant is great. See page 158 for a dramatic example. Of course, serious clinical trials need to be conducted, but in the meantime, ashwagandha is non-toxic, affordable, and available for use. You will find capsules and extracts in health food stores, often in the Ayurvedic herbal sections that are beginning to appear in those stores, as that form of traditional medicine makes inroads here. Follow the dosage recommended on the label and give it a good 2-month trial. Astragalus. Astragalus is a large genus in the pea family, some species of which are toxic to livestock. Loco weed of the American Southwest is an astragalus, but the toxins are only in the above-ground parts, and this tonic comes from the root of a non-toxic Chinese species, A. membranaceus. The plant is a perennial with long fibrous roots that is native to northern China and Inner Mongolia and is sold in both wild and cultivated forms. Chinese pharmacies sell bundles of thin root slices that resemble tongue depressors and have a sweet taste. These are simmered in medicinal soups, the slices removed before serving because they are too tough to chew. Chinese pharmacies also sell many preparations of astragalus, both singly and in combination with other herbs. These are popular remedies for the prevention and treatment of colds and flus. You will find similar products in herb stores here. Practitioners of traditional Chinese medicine consider astragalus a true tonic that can strengthen debilitated patients and increase resistance to disease in general. In contemporary Chinese medicine, it is also a chief component of Fuzheng therapy, a combination herbal treatment designed to restore immune function in cancer patients undergoing chemotherapy and radiation therapy. Research in China has demonstrated increased survival in patients receiving both herbal and Western therapies, as well as protection from the immunosuppressive effects of the latter. I commonly recommend astragalus to cancer patients. It will not interfere with the conventional therapies. Studies in the West confirm that astragalus enhances immune function by increasing activity of several kinds of white blood cells and boosting production of antibodies and interferon, the body's own antiviral agent. If you feel you lack energy and vitality, have depressed immunity, and get too many colds, consider going on a course of astragalus. Follow dosage recommendations on the label. Cordyceps. Known in China as the caterpillar fungus, Cordyceps sinensis is a peculiar mushroom that parasitizes the bodies of certain moth larvae. Fine threads of the fungal organism penetrate the living body of a larva, killing it and mummifying it. The mushroom then sends up its fruiting body, a slender stalk with a swollen end that will release spores. Cordyceps is found in mountainous regions of China and Tibet, and is now much cultivated, on grain, not larvae, because it is in great demand as a powerful tonic and restorative, believed to increase physical stamina, mental energy, sexual vigor, and longevity. It has a particular reputation for improving athletic performance, perhaps by increasing cardiac output, and I have a number of reports from runners who say it has improved their times in races. In China, cordyceps is considered safe and gentle, useful for both men and women of any age and state of health, even the most infirm. Chinese people buy whole dried cordyceps, including the mummified larvae and fungal fruit bodies, and simmer them in soups and stews made from duck and chicken to create medicinal foods. You can do the same. See appendix for a source of cordyceps, or buy powdered cordyceps for making tea, liquid extracts that may include other Chinese herbs, or encapsulated forms. For general weakness, take it once a day, following dosage advice on the product. For health maintenance, in the absence of specific problems, take it once or twice a week. Dong Quai. The root of Angelica sinensis, a plant in the carrot family, Dong Quai is a popular blood-building tonic and circulatory stimulant in traditional Chinese medicine. But in the last century, Westerners discovered its usefulness as a general tonic for women. Many Western herbalists and naturopaths and some physicians now recommend it for disorders of the female reproductive system, especially for irregular or difficult menstruation. Chinese doctors recognize its ability to tone the uterus and balance female hormonal chemistry, but they think of Dong Quai as beneficial for both sexes and often included in tonic formulas for men, combined with ginseng. In men, it is supposed to help build muscle and blood. Dong Quai is non-toxic and effective. I have frequently recommended it to women experiencing menstrual problems or menopausal symptoms, and to those who lack energy, all with good results. You can easily find it in health food stores in tincture or capsule form. If you want to experiment with it, try taking 2 capsules of the root twice a day or 1 dropperful of the tincture in a little water twice a day. Ginseng. Since I have already written at length about ginseng, I need only give you some practical advice about it. Many forms of ginseng are on the market, from whole dried roots to ginseng brandies, candies, wines, teas, and a multitude of liquid and solid extracts. I must warn you that some of these products contain little or no ginseng. Whenever a medicinal plant is scarce, expensive, and in great demand, imitation and adulterated products will abound. Panax, both the Asian and American species, owes its beneficial effects to ginsenosides, unusual compounds not found elsewhere in nature. If ginseng products are real, they must contain ginsenosides. The more, the better. So unless you are buying whole roots, which are unmistakable once you have seen them, stick to standardized products whose labels state the ginsenoside content. Ginseng is generally safe, but the Asian variety can raise blood pressure in some individuals, as well as cause irritability and insomnia. If you experience these effects, lower the dose or switch to American ginseng, which may be better as a first choice unless you want to feel stimulated or are a man looking for increased sexual drive. Whole roots are meant to be chopped and simmered at length into a medicinal tea. It is easier to take liquid extracts, capsules, or tablets. Many ginseng products are now available and labels indicate proper dosage. I recommend ginseng frequently to people with low vitality or weakness due to chronic illness or old age. Most people who try it report that they are happy with its effects and plan to continue to take it. Maitake. Maitake is the Japanese name for a mushroom, Grifola frondosa, that is both edible and medicinal. American mushroom hunters know it as hen of the woods because it grows in big clusters weighing up to 100 pounds at the base of trees or stumps, clusters that resemble the fluffed tail feathers of a nesting hen. In the early 1980s, Japanese scientists began to cultivate maitake on sawdust. The cultivated form is now sold in supermarkets throughout Japan. It looks like a dark gray floral bouquet, except instead of flowers, it is made up of many overlapping fan-shaped mushroom caps. Mushroom growers here are now also producing maitake, a very tasty mushroom with remarkable tonic effects, especially on the immune system. Research indicates that maitake has significant anti-cancer, antiviral, and immune-enhancing properties. It may also reduce blood pressure and blood sugar. I recommend it often to people with cancer, AIDS, and other immune deficiency states, chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic hepatitis, and environmental illnesses that may represent toxic overloads. You can buy the dried mushroom, which should be reconstituted in water, then cooked with rice or in stir-fries, tablets of it, or liquid extract. My tonic of choice at the moment is a liquid extract of several species of Asian mushrooms that contains maitake as one ingredient. See appendix for a source. New evidence suggests that taking medicinal mushrooms in combination is more effective than taking single species. I take a dropperful of the combination product and water twice a day. And since I've been doing so, I almost never get colds, even though my staff and medical partners' children and their friends are constantly bringing colds into my house. If you are lucky enough to get the actual mushrooms, fresh or dried, eat them frequently. Otherwise, follow the recommended dosage on the products you buy. Milk thistle. This remarkable remedy comes from the tradition of European folk medicine. It is the seed of a robust, spiny plant, Psyllobium marianum, that has great liver-protective properties. An extract of the seed, Psyllimarin, enhances metabolism of liver cells and protects them from toxic injury. Conventional medicine has nothing comparable to offer patients with liver problems, and milk thistle products are completely non-toxic and inexpensive. I recommend this tonic for all heavy users of alcohol and pharmaceutical drugs that are hard on the liver, including cancer patients undergoing therapy. Note that medical research demonstrates that milk thistle influences the cytochrome P450 system, an enzymatic system of the liver and gut that detoxifies and inactivates harmful substances in the body. Evidence suggests it induces some key enzymes and suppresses others. By modifying the activity of P450 enzymes, milk thistle may accelerate the removal of various drugs affected by this system, such as Coumadin, some AIDS drugs, antibiotics, and antifungals. I think the safety of cancer patients and the protection of their liver and kidneys is much more important than the potential minimal effects it may have on the metabolism of chemotherapy drugs. I recommend that cancer patients tell their doctor that they are using milk thistle so their physician can monitor the effectiveness of medical drugs. I always recommend milk thistle to patients with chronic hepatitis and abnormal liver function from any cause. When added to a sensible regimen of dietary and lifestyle change after several months of regular use, it can return liver function to normal. If you work with toxic chemicals or feel you have suffered toxic exposures from any source, take milk thistle for a while. It will help your body recover from any harm. You will find this remedy in all health food stores. My preference, always with herbal products, is to rely on standardized extracts. Follow the suggested dosage on the label of the product you buy, or take 2 tablets or capsules twice a day. You can stay on milk thistle indefinitely. Reishi. Reishi is a mushroom, Ganoderma lucidum, that grows on trees, has a surface that appears lacquered, and is one of the most important tonics in the traditional medicine of China and Japan, particularly esteemed for extending longevity. Reishi is a purely medicinal mushroom, not a culinary one, both because it is hard and woody and because it tastes very bitter. But it is non-toxic and has been the subject of a surprising amount of scientific research both in Asia and the West. The results of research in animals were so promising that human studies have followed. Like maitake and other related mushroom species, reishi improves immune function and inhibits the growth of some malignant tumors. Additionally, it shows significant anti-inflammatory effect, reduces allergic responsiveness, and protects the liver. Because it is easily cultivated, reishi is widely available and not too expensive. If you don't mind the bitterness, you can make tea of the ground mushroom. In some products, it is mixed with other tonic mushrooms that improve the taste. Or you can buy reishi tablets. Follow the recommended dosage and take reishi every day for at least 2 months to see what it can do for you. Eleuthero. The last tonic I will tell you about comes from the root of a large, spiny shrub, Eleutherococcus senticosus, native to North China and Siberia. It is one of the most widely used herbs in the world, so much in demand that authentic material may be hard to find. Formerly known as spiny and Siberian ginseng, this species is a relative of true Panax ginseng. Soviet scientists discovered its adaptogenic properties in the course of searching for ginseng substitutes, and as news of its benefits spread, many Soviet athletes and military personnel began to use it to increase their physical performance and endurance. The stress protective effects of Eleuthero are well documented in both animal and human studies, as is its ability to enhance immune function. The active components are a distinctive group of compounds called eleutherosides, and unless Siberian ginseng products specify their eleutheroside content, you are probably not getting the real thing. I find it to be a reliable tonic with general restorative effects, especially useful for people who lack energy and vitality. It is non-toxic and can be used safely over long periods of time. Take 2 capsules or tablets of a standardized extract twice a day, unless the label on the product you buy specifies otherwise. With this information, you can plan a trial of a tonic that you can start in the last week of the 8-week program. Pick 1 or 2 that interest you and seem suited to your needs. Then inquire about their availability and decide how you will use them. Tonics are allies in your progress toward optimum health. Learn how to take advantage of these gifts from nature. Diet. I would like you to add some cooked greens to your diet this week. If you have not discovered the delights of these healthy vegetables, you may find this assignment challenging. I would not have considered eating greens when I was growing up, and tasting some of the ghastly versions served to me in school and hospital cafeterias confirmed my childhood aversion. You may have had the same experience, which is too bad, because dark, leafy greens are full of natural agents that can protect health, and they are too often missing from our diets. Greens are high in vitamins and minerals, including iron and calcium in forms that the body can absorb and use more readily than supplements. For example, they are a major source of folic acid, folate, a B vitamin that regulates protein metabolism and offers significant protection against coronary heart disease. Folate and foliage share the same root. In other cultures, cooked greens appear with great regularity at most meals, even with breakfast in traditional Japanese cuisine. In general, Asians are very good about eating their greens and have many varieties to choose from. One teaching of yoga dietetics is that optimum health requires eating freshly cooked greens at least once a day. In the American South, people eat greens more often than in other parts of the country. But they generally drown them in fat, often bacon grease. If you have met only greens that were cooked to death, you are in for a pleasant surprise when you try the recipes that follow. Some greens have strong tastes that people may dislike. Beet greens and chard, for example, both contain oxalic acid, which accounts for a sharp flavor. Often, older leaves have more of this flavor than younger ones, and some varieties are stronger tasting than others. In my garden, I grow a white beet whose leaves taste mild at all stages of maturity, and I eat only young chard. On the other hand, I find kale to be generally mild and good-tasting, as long as it is prepared properly. Improper preparation can result in unappetizing textures, as well as colors and flavors. If you do not remove the tough central stalks of big leaves, you will wind up with pieces of them on your plate and in your mouth. Cutting leaves into shreds or bite-sized pieces makes them more appealing. I am not fond of thick, curly varieties of kale, but I love smooth, tender ones. If you do not like your greens straight, you can try mixing them with pasta, potatoes, rice, or beans. They are easy to prepare, and I encourage you to try them. I believe that including these foods in your diet will reduce your risks of cancer and heart disease, improve digestion, and help protect your healing system from toxic injury. Here is a recipe for a light soup containing 3 tonic herbs, garlic, ginger, and astragalus. It also has onion and shiitake mushrooms to lower cholesterol, and vegetables rich in antioxidants. Tonic soup. 8 cups vegetable stock, see pages 96 to 98, 1 tablespoon olive oil, 1 onion diced, 4 to 8 cloves garlic, minced, 1 1-inch piece of fresh ginger root, peeled and finely chopped. 1 cup sliced carrots. 1 slice astragalus root. 1 cup shiitake mushrooms, fresh or reconstituted, sliced. 1 cup broccoli flowerets. 1. Bring the vegetable broth to a boil in a large pot. 2. Meanwhile, heat the olive oil in a skillet and add the onion, garlic, and ginger. Sauté over low heat until soft and aromatic. 3. Add contents of skillet to broth along with carrots, astragalus root, and shiitake mushrooms. 4. Simmer, covered, 1 hour. 5. Add the broccoli flowerets in the last 5 minutes and remove astragalus before serving. Serves 8. And here are some of my favorite recipes using greens. Kale with potatoes. 1 pound medium red potatoes. 4 cups shredded kale. See procedure below. 2 tablespoons olive oil. 1 large onion chopped. Salt to taste. 1. The potatoes can be prepared in advance and refrigerated. Boil them until tender. Peel while hot, then cool in cold water and drain. Cut into thick slices. 2. Wash the kale, drain, and remove the stems and mid-ribs. Stack leaves, roll up lengthwise, and shred crosswise. Always choose kale that is not wilted, with good color. I much prefer smooth varieties to curly ones. My favorite is Red Russian. 3. In a large skillet, heat the olive oil and add the onion. Sauté over medium-high heat, stirring until onion just begins to brown. 4. Add kale, tossing it about until it all wilts. Reduce heat to medium and stir-fry kale for 5 minutes more. 5. Add the potatoes and cook until they are heated through. Season to taste with salt and serve. Serves 4 to 6. Pasta with greens. 1/2 cup sun-dried tomatoes, 1 pound dried pasta, penne, rigatoni, twists, etc. 1 pound greens, collards, kale, beet greens, chard, or a mixture of these. 2 tablespoons olive oil. 1 large onion, thinly sliced. 1/2 teaspoon hot red pepper flakes. 2 to 4 cloves garlic, minced. 1 tablespoon dried basil. 2 tablespoons capers. Grated Parmesan cheese. Optional. 1. Soak the sun-dried tomatoes in hot water till soft, about 10 minutes. Drain, cut into pieces, and reserve. 2. Begin cooking the pasta. 3. While pasta is cooking, prepare greens. Wash, drain, remove all coarse stems and midribs, then chop coarsely and reserve. 4. Heat the olive oil in a skillet, add the onion and red pepper flakes, and sauté over medium-high heat. 5. When onions begin to color, add the tomatoes and chopped greens, tossing well to wilt. Mash in the garlic, add basil, and cook for 5 minutes. Add capers with a little of their liquid. 6. Drain the pasta and mix with vegetables. Serve with grated Parmesan cheese if desired. Serve 6. Beet greens and tofu. 1 cup tofu cubes, see procedure below. 1 pound beet greens. 1 tablespoon canola oil. 1 medium onion chopped. 1 clove garlic smashed. Reduced sodium soy sauce or teriyaki sauce to taste. 1. If you use fresh tofu for this easy and surprisingly good dish, drain it, slice it 1/2 inch thick, place the slices on a dish towel or layers of paper towel, cover with another cloth or paper towel, then place a board on top and weight the board with a few heavy cans or a pot of water. Press the tofu slices for 1 hour, then remove and cut into 1/2 inch cubes. You can also use baked pressed tofu, in which case you just need to cut it into cubes. Either way, you will want to end up with 1 cup tofu cube. 2. Wash the beet greens, drain, remove stems, and shred. 3. Heat the canola oil in a skillet and add the onion. Sauté over medium-high heat until onion is translucent, then add the tofu and continue cooking until tofu begins to color. 4. Add the beet greens and garlic. Stir fry until greens are cooked, about 5 minutes. 5. Season with soy sauce or teriyaki sauce and cook for another minute to blend flavors. Serve over brown rice. Serves 4. Curried greens. 1 pound spinach, kale, collards, or beet greens. 2 cloves garlic, minced. 2 to 3 tablespoons curry powder. 1 cup finely chopped tomatoes, fresh or canned. 1 tablespoon tomato paste. 1 tablespoon dark brown sugar, 1 tablespoon canola oil, 1 cup onion, finely diced, 3/4 of a pound potatoes, peeled and cubed, 1/4 cup chopped fresh cilantro, optional. 1. Wash and drain greens, removing any coarse stems and midribs, cut into 1/2 inch strips. 2. In a bowl, mix together the garlic, curry powder, tomatoes, tomato paste, and sugar. 3. Heat the canola oil in a large, deep skillet and sauté onion over medium-high heat until it begins to brown. Add the spice and tomato mixture, mix well, and cook for a few minutes. 4. Add the potatoes and 2 cups water. 5. Mix well, bring to a boil, reduce heat, cover, and cook for 10 minutes. 6. Add greens and cook for 10 minutes more, or until potatoes are done. Correct seasoning. Garnish with the chopped fresh cilantro, if desired. Serve 6. Hot and sour greens. 1 pound greens, bok choy, kale, collards, or Chinese cabbage, 2 teaspoons canola oil, 2 large cloves garlic, minced, 1/4 teaspoon hot red pepper flakes, 1/4 teaspoon dry mustard powder, 2 tablespoons rice vinegar, 1 teaspoon soy sauce, 1 teaspoon light brown sugar. 1. Wash and drain greens, remove any tough stems and slice leaves into half-inch shreds. If using bok choy or Chinese cabbage, trim off the end and slice stems 1/4 inch thick and leaves 1/2 inch thick. 2. Heat the canola oil in a skillet over medium heat. Add the garlic and red pepper flakes and stir fry for 1 minute. 3. Add the greens along with the mustard and stir to coat with the spices. 4. Combine the rice vinegar, soy sauce, and sugar and add to skillet. Cook covered over medium heat until vegetables are tender, about 5 minutes. Serves 4. Mental Spiritual. You have a fun assignment this week. Appreciate a work of art. Just as music and the natural beauty of flowers and parks can raise your spirits, so can beautiful paintings, sculpture, and architecture. Pay a visit this week to a favorite work of art, whether a painting in a museum, a favorite building, or a statue. Just admire it, letting it please your senses and nourish your non-physical being. Optional. Restrict yourself during 1 day to juices, both fruit and vegetable. If you can prepare the juices yourself or buy them freshly prepared, they will taste better and give you more nutrients, because juice deteriorates quickly on exposure to air. Drink as much juice as you want, along with plenty of water and herbal tea if you desire. Be aware, however, that fruit juices are a concentrated sugar source, and moderate your intake accordingly if you are trying to lose weight or are sensitive to sharp changes in blood sugar. Limiting your diet to fruit and vegetable juice is a way to give your digestive system a good rest. A healing story. A testimonial to ashwagandha and Ayurveda. I met Dr. Patricia Ammon, a family practice doctor from Ridgeway, Colorado, at a conference on botanical medicine in March 1996. When she told me she had had multiple sclerosis, I was surprised because she looked completely well. I asked her to write down her story. Having graduated from a family practice residency in 1991 at the age of 34, I was thrilled to be embarking on my new career as a physician in the Telluride, Colorado Medical Clinic. My husband and I moved a house trailer to our dreamland on Horsefly Mesa with a spectacular view of the San Juan Mountains, settled down to work hard, build our dream house, and live happily ever after. During the winter of 1991-1992, I noticed more fatigue than I had ever felt as a resident. Our house is well off the highway, and the county does not maintain the county road, which we didn't consider a problem as we are both avid cross-country skiers. By April 1992, after 5 months of skiing the mile to our home, it became apparent that I was having difficulty with the uphill part of the trail. I blame this on the increasing stress I perceived in my job. I decided I needed more time off and left the Telluride Clinic to work at an emergency clinic in another town, where I had 8 24-hour shifts a month. Through the summer, I continued to experience fatigue and developed a fairly profound depression. My family physician recommended counseling and antidepressants. By fall 1992, I was having numbness in my left leg and was more depressed than ever, despite high doses of antidepressants. In January 1993, I finally saw a neurologist at my family physician's insistence. I was too depressed and drugged to think clearly. An MRI scan showed multiple sclerosis beyond a doubt. I got up from the MRI table, talked to the radiologist, who was a friend, and went and purchased a one-way ticket to Hawaii to visit a friend I trained with in residency. She is a practicing Buddhist who was able to teach me some yoga and meditation techniques. I returned home after 3 weeks and unwisely went right back to work in the emergency department. By June 1993, I was having numbness in my left foot and hand and the right side of my face. My handwriting, which had always been good, became unreadable. In July of that year, I went to an MS center for evaluation and was advised to have 4 days of inpatient treatment with high-dose steroids. I was scared, but felt so miserable that I agreed to the plan. I spent 4 days in a hospital in Denver receiving 1 gram of intravenous solumedrol a day, which made me quite psychotic. After I came home, I was much worse than before. I gained weight, couldn't sleep, and had to decrease my work hours, often not being able to finish my shift. The depression was almost unbearable. I could walk around the emergency department and my home, but could not walk more than 1/8 of a mile continuously. Prior to the steroids, I felt bad, but at least I could walk up to 1 mile a day, and I slept okay. In the fall of 1993, I visited Paul Curley, M.D., an internal medicine physician on the faculty where I did my residency. I knew he practiced Ayurvedic medicine, the traditional medicine of India, but had paid little attention to this as a resident. There was so much else to learn. Paul suggested some yoga exercises and a combination herbal treatment. In October 1993, I consulted another Ayurvedic practitioner, Nancy Lonsdorf, M.D., who had just completed a book on the subject. Nancy took my pulse, did an exam, and told me I had a deep imbalance of vata,